This is the Janine Pirro Show. Now, here's Judge Janine Pirro.
Welcome back to the Judge Janine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Joining us now is an attorney, a professor, an author. His new book is called Get Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law. Please join me in welcoming Alan Dershowitz to the Judge Janine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Now, I'm sure you all know of Professor Dershowitz. He was a professor at Harvard Law School. It doesn't get much more prestigious than that. He has an incredible legal background, and his new book is The Price of Principle, Why Integrity is Worth the Consequences. So, I mean, I can't imagine a more knowledgeable individual to talk about this effort to indict the former president than Professor Alan Dershowitz. So, Professor Dershowitz, I will start with this. It seems as though a definite indictment became a certain indictment, became a probable, became a maybe, and now is there going to be an indictment against former President Donald Trump?
Not if District Attorney Bragg has any sense at all. First of all, he has only three choices now that the Cohen background has been exposed by Costello. He has only three choices.
Michael Cohen, that is the former attorney for Donald Trump.
Right. He can try to make the case without Cohen, using people like the former head or the head of the National Enquirer. That will be a very weak case. He could drop the case, which he should do, or he could put Cohen on the witness stand and endanger his own bar standing. Remember, it is an ethical violation for a prosecutor, you know this, to put on the witness stand a witness that he knows is lying. How can anybody not know that Cohen will be lying? He has told completely contradictory stories to his own lawyers, to the federal government. The best he can say is, well, I was lying then, I'm not lying now. But he's lying now. And a decent prosecutor, an honest prosecutor, cannot rely on somebody he knows to be lying. So I suspect there are people in his office and Bragg's office who are saying, wait a minute. This is going to get the office in trouble. Remember, this is the office that used to be headed by Bob Morgenthau.
That's right.
Mike Hogan, the greatest prosecutorial office other than yours, maybe, but the greatest prosecutorial office in America. It was the, you know, the gold standard, and now look what it's come to. This is the worst case of prosecutorial discretion abuse I have seen in my 60 years of practice.
There's, you know, no Professor Dershowitz,
there's no misdemeanor, there's no felony. Yeah.
Right, right. And I think that both of us, I mean, you know, you've been a very famous defense attorney. I mean, I spent my whole life as on the prosecution side and on the bench. But it seems to me that the idea that Bragg said no, the Federal Election Committee said no, the Southern District of New York said no, everybody and everybody refused, Cy Vance, the former DA, everyone who looked at this said no. Then this guy, Mark Pomerantz, who was an assistant U.S. attorney for many years, he literally says, I'll work for free to get Trump. He leaves the office. You want to talk about another one who's involved in unethical and improper behavior. He writes a book based upon what his the impression of what's going on and the information he got in the DA's office. And then all of a sudden there's pressure on Alvin Bragg. Does Alvin Bragg then respond to the last and loudest voice? Is he that weak? I mean, a guy, the DA, Alvin Bragg, he reduces felonies to misdemeanors. Yeah. That's his first day mission.
Yeah, look, remember, the reason I entitled my book Get Trump, it's not an original title with me. That was the campaign pledge of the Attorney General of New York. She promised, if you elect me Attorney General, I will, quote, get Trump. The same thing was true of Bragg. He promised that he would target Trump. And the idea that you now, after all these years, what about the statute of limitations? Now, New York has some strange interpretations, but the statute itself is as clear as can be. In order to avoid the statute, you have to be continuously outside of the state. Now, he wasn't continuously outside of the state. He was in and out of the state. And the reason they didn't indict had nothing to do with there wasn't evidence or he was escaping or anything like that. They didn't want, they made a decision not to prosecute.
That's right.
And the policies behind the statute of limitations are clear here. Also, in my book, Get Trump, I go through every one of the four cases against Trump, the one in Georgia, the one in Florida, the one in Washington, D.C. There is nothing to any of them, any first-year law student. If the defendant's name was John Smith, could win these cases without even going in front of a jury, just in front of a judge. But because the guy's name is Donald Trump, and I didn't vote for Donald Trump, I voted against him twice. Mm-hmm. I'm a liberal Democrat, but I care right. more about the rule of law than I do about the politics.
Well, so, Professor Alan Dershowitz, you always have. You have always cared about the fundamental issue. The facts are really not what sway you. It's the law. I mean, that is a history, and that is who you have been your entire life. And I respect you for that, although, you know, there are times I don't agree. And that's good, you're smart. You're a smart professional who understands the importance of the law. But the law is now being weaponized to go after political enemies. Who would have thought in the United States, Professor Dershowitz?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why I would have thought. I was part of the civil rights movement in the 1960s, and I trained at Howard University for how to get down to the South. And the first thing they told me is, don't put out your cigarette on the ground, and don't spit on the ground, because they're targeting you, and they will indict you for a felony for, believe it or not, destroying government property. That stuck with me for the last 60 years. Mm-hmm. So it was the segregationist sheriffs in the South that were trying to target civil rights workers, and that's the precedent that Bragg is now using to target Donald Trump. It's a shame. It's a scandal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it really is the idea. So if we could explain this to the listeners. So the Federal Election Commission had made a decision not to go forward because the fundamental issue is there is a payment that was made to this Stormy Daniels, and that payment was made by Michael Cohen. And the president, before he ran, apparently was paying him in monthly installments and taking it as legal expenses. They then say, no, that was really a campaign expense. Now, I want you to consider this. Hillary Clinton paid for that Steele dossier, which we know was fake, which was used as a basis for an illegal warrant gotten from the FISA court, and she took that as a legal expense to Perkins Coie. Now, the Federal Election Commission fined her for that, but nobody indicted her, and it's worse on her part because she actually used campaign funds. Donald Trump used his own money. And that's not illegal. It happens every day by heads of corporations and people who just want things to go away, a non-disclosure. Am I right or wrong there?
No, we know that. And you have to have a single standard of law. Under the prosecution's theory, you expect that Trump and Cohen would pay Stormy Daniels a non-disclosure agreement and then list on his corporate form, the reason I paid it is because I was giving hush money to a porn star in order to prevent my wife from learning that I had an adulterous affair. When's the last time that ever happened? How is it possible a crime to say that it was for legal expenses? Again, maybe a fine, maybe a slap on the wrist. And then to turn that into a felony by saying it never occurred to Trump that this would protect him against recriminations by his business associates, by his wife, etc. The only reason he did this was to help himself get elected president. It's so absurd.
Well, especially, you know, he's married to Melania Trump. You know, I would understand how he would want her to know about it. You know, it any husband doesn't want his wife to know about this kind of thing. And, you know, he says it's not true anyway. And by the way, did she just come out recently and say it never happened? This stuff just never ends. And Michael Cohen is like, you know, this guy is a perjurer. He's a liar. I mean, he is the last thing that I would ever use as a basis for a prosecution.
Well, that to me, you know, I taught legal ethics for 35 years at Harvard, and I used to have prosecutors come by the class. I had Stephen Trott, who was this great prosecutor and now a judge. I had Rudy Giuliani. I'm sorry I never had you, but I would have prosecutors come by all the time. And the first rule they would say is you cannot put a witness on the stand unless you are confident that that witness is telling the truth. The same thing is true for a defense attorney. I've been practicing law for all these years. I have never put a witness on the stand who I had any doubt about their credibility, which is why 90% of my clients never took the stand because I didn't allow them to.
Right.
That was the rule. You don't lie if you're represented by Alan Dershowitz. That's the rule, and that should be the rule for Bragg. You don't lie if you're called as a witness by the district attorney, but he can't help lying. It's not his fault. He's not his fault. He doesn't know the difference between truth and falsity. As he told his lawyer, I'll do anything to escape prison. And we know that sometimes defendants do that, and he didn't escape prison, but he's blaming all that on Donald Trump. And believe me, he hasn't suddenly come down and heard the word of God who said, now you must tell the truth. That's just not the way it works.
Well, it's not only not the way it works, but for a prosecutor not to realize that is pathetic. And I think Alan Bragg is pathetic. I mean, this is a guy who on his first day in office as DA in Manhattan, so-called DA, said, hey, if you bring in, an Uzi or an AR-15 to a robbery, but you don't shoot anybody, it will give you a misdemeanor. I mean, like, come in with a bazooka if you want to. You know, it's crazy, crazy, wanting social justice for some and wanting to literally crucify others. Professor Alan Dershowitz, what do you think's going to happen in the end here?
Well, I think in the end, the likelihood is he'll be indicted. And then the question is, will an elected judge in New York, and you know elected judges in New York, you've been one, will a judge in New York have the courage to throw this out on legal grounds? Or will he worry, the judge or she, that she'll be Alan Dershowitz? Remember what happened when I defended President Trump in the floor of the Senate.
Oh, yes.
People stopped talking to me. They wouldn't go to the gym with my wife. Caroline Kennedy said if I knew you had been invited to this dinner, I wouldn't have come. Any judge who throws out in Manhattan, who throws out a case against Donald Trump, will be ostracized, canceled, and lose their friends. And, you know, I have an article in today's New York Daily News. You cannot get a fair trial if your name is Donald Trump in the borough of Manhattan. It's impossible.
Maybe
Westchester County, maybe Staten Island, maybe upstate New York. Manhattan, 87% vote against Trump? You think that any judge, any juror will be ready to face their friends if it's known that that juror or judge voted to acquit or threw the case out on legal grounds? I don't think he has a ghost of a chance of getting a fair trial.
You know, Professor Alan Dershowitz, it is stunning that you and I are having a conversation that if a judge rules according to the law, and I would dismiss based upon, you know, the insufficiency of the indictment, but that this is America and people, and this is all the left. We've got to be clear. I don't know anybody on the right who's doing this. This is all the left, and people unfriend you. People don't talk to you. A friend of mine who is a very successful person in New York City, you know, I saw him. I bumped into him. He said, please, please don't tell my wife that I said hello to you. I mean, we're walking. I walked by him on the street, and I was like, you've been to my house. The two of you have been friends for years. Our kids went to school together. The hate and the fascism from the left to not tolerate anyone on the right is stunning. How did they get away with this? Where was the bump that they got over that was like, oh, it's okay to hate everybody on the right?
Well, look at what happened with Larry David. He was a close friend of mine. He used to come to my house to work out in my gym. We would have dinner at my house 3-4 times every summer. Sees me after I represented President Trump, and he says, you're disgusting, I'll never talk to you again, yells at me, screams at me. I helped his daughter get into college. I advised him on his show on numerous issues. But, you know, the Trump thing, and I didn't vote for Trump.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter to him. What he called me was an enabler. I'm an enabler. That's what they said during McCarthyism, that if you're a lawyer, a civil liberties lawyer, who represented somebody accused of being a communist, you're an enabler of Stalin. You're an enabler of communism. It's not the way our legal system works. I'm not an enabler. I'm a lawyer. You know, I represent people, and I represent them because the Sixth Amendment says they have a right to trial by jury with a competent counsel. And I'm going to continue doing that, even if I have no friends. You know, it's interesting because I have a lot of people on the right don't like me because I say over and over again that I didn't vote for Trump. And, of course, more people on the left.
Who cares? Am I insulting? No. Good for, I mean, you make your own decision.
Of course.
That's America.
Yeah. My wife stood over me when I cast my ballot for Biden because she wasn't completely sure that I wouldn't vote for Trump. So she actually videotaped me filling in the form that I voted for Biden so she could tell her friends that she knows for sure that I didn't vote for Trump. I mean, the social pressures are incredible. In fact, that incident led me to think that we should not have absentee ballots as the norm. Because although in my case it's a joke, I would have voted for Biden anyway. I can imagine some people being influenced by others if they vote by paper, the letters, without any supervision and without any isolation. So, you know, that's another issue I'm concerned about. But that's for a different day. Look, Get Trump. That's if you buy my book, Get Trump. That is telling Bragg, we have somebody watching you. There is accountability. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is I knew it would be unpopular with some people, but it's really important for people to know that history will account for these people. That 10 years now, 20 years from now, people are going to be asking, did you violate the Constitution to get Trump? Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. All right. Professor Alan Dershowitz, thank you so much for joining us on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. I want to thank you for being with us today. You've been a great guest, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Be well.
All right. And never forget, that's a commitment we made on 9/11. Honor it by donating $11 a month to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
It's the Cats Roundtable on 77 WABC.